Hey there, welcome to Amateur Tarot Pod. This is Brian. I am sans Ben. This is a new type of episode that we're trying out because Ben gets sick of me a lot and I do a lot of extra stuff that Ben just doesn't care about. Ben is horrible. He's a bad host and a bad friend and he's never going to listen to this, so I can say whatever I want without any fear of repercussions because he's also mean. But anyway, this is Amateur Tarot Pod's first extrasode. Instead of the normal two fakers that use mysticism to give advice, these extrasodes are going to be about education, which is why Ben's not here, because he's very dedicated to the amateur portion, and I'm very dedicated to being, I don't know, pro-am. We'll go in depth with describing the different cards of the deck each time we have one of these extrasodes, maybe every week, maybe every other week. I guess it depends on the cry from you, the listening public. We're going to have guests also that contribute to the world of woo-woo, and we're going to have those guests explore various different avenues there. And we're going to do it with respect, but also with the knowledge that your hosts here don't believe in magic or mysticism. And so we, as usual, are going to be the jokes here. And that, in a nutshell, is what the mini episode is going to be. I'm going to try that one more time.
Okay. I'll try not to laugh.
Oh, no, that's fine. I love it. Hey, welcome to Amateur Tarot Pod's first extrasode. This is your host, Brian. Ben wasn't able to make it because he doesn't care enough to show up. He doesn't call. He doesn't write. I don't know how to get through to him. If you've seen Ben, just tell him that we love him and we'd really like to talk to him again. But while he's not here, I guess we'll have this extrasode. So an extrasode, instead of the two of us, me and Ben, faking using mysticism to give advice using the tarot cards, the extrasodes are going to be about education. They're going to kind of go against the whole amateur mentality because we're going to learn a little bit about tarot and about the world of woo-woo in general. We're going to go in depth each week or each episode describing the different cards in the deck, and we're going to have guests from the world of woo-woo that will help us explore various avenues there. And so our guests are going to be total professionals and we're still going to be the jokes. So I guess without any further ado, let's just jump right into describing our card of the episode. So here we are. This is the card of the episode. The card of this episode is the Fool. The Fool is typically shown as the first card in the major arcana. He's got a zero value though, so he can squeeze in just about anywhere. Typically, he goes either at the very beginning or the very end of the major arcana cards. And that is the charm and the danger of him. He's unpredictable. And what we're looking at on most Fool cards, let me backtrack just a little bit. We're probably going to be talking about the Rider-Waite deck mainly because that's what people are most familiar with. So you can picture it in your head. A lot of decks will have a lot of the same imagery, but no deck is going to be exactly the same. So if what you're looking at is a different Fool card than I'm talking about, then I'm happy to hear about it. But I'm talking about the Rider-Waite Fool. And what we're looking at is a carefree youth with a sun at his back. He's walking dangerously near to a cliff's edge. There's a little dog yapping alongside him. He's got a white rose in one of his hands. He's got on some great boots. He's got a feather in his cap, and he has a staff over his shoulder that has a bag slung on the end, if you can picture like a hobo's bindle stick. And so the imagery on this card, the sun is kind of representing enlightenment. The fact that he's a young man indicates innocence and naivete. The cliff that he's walking on is the world that's known, and then the land beyond the cliff is the world that's unknown. That is not a shocker, I guess. And it also represents adventure and danger. It's whatever is coming next, like 1 second after this card happens. The little pupper is nature, instinct. He's assistance and loyalty. He can be talking about the things that are inside of you, Or he can be indicating someone or something that's trying to nudge you in the right direction and away from danger. The white rose indicates purity of spirit. Those sassy little boots are adventure and preparation. He's at least got enough preparation to put on shoes to go out on this adventure. The feather is whimsical and, again, innocent. He's guileless. The staff, the stick that he's using to carry his bag, that is power. And the staff represents power throughout a lot of the cards of the deck. But the way that the fool is using it, it's power that he doesn't even know about. It's unused power. And then the bag that's at the end of the staff is experience and knowledge. And again, it's experience and knowledge that's held in a bag that he's got over his shoulder. So at some point, he's maybe going to use that, but right now he's just kind of holding it. And so what does the fool mean when you have him in a reading or when you're just looking at the card? What is he talking about? He indicates somebody that's venturing forth into the world with innocence and naivete, like I said before. Depending on the focus of the question that's being asked, it could be the beginning of a relationship, a business venture, just any new phase of life. And so one of my favorite cards is the Knight of Swords. And the Knight of Swords is really aware of the risks and just doesn't care. He just forges ahead with no regard for safety. The Fool also forges ahead, but he's completely unaware of any possible dangers that are ahead. He has everything with him that he might need on his journey, but he hasn't yet gotten to a place where he needs to tap into those resources. And he's lucky in that he has a loyal friend. He's got a pupper alongside him that scampers along. And the dog, like I said before, he's a reminder to pay attention to your instincts. And he's also a guardian. He might represent someone that's actually in the fool's life, who's an ally at their side, urging them towards safety whenever they stray too close to the edge of that cliff. And it's simple to drag the fool into a real life situation to kind of bring an analog over. The concepts of innocence, adventure, and beginnings apply whenever we encounter a new situation or look to make a change in our lives. And the delight that comes with the Fool card is the same thing that might make us pay more attention to a more mature card. We don't yet know what we don't yet know. The chances of failure and success might be in our favor or they might not. But when we can only envision the immediate or most positive outcome, we're more likely to steer in that direction. And the Fool card is exciting. It speaks to limitless possibility because he's unhindered by the right or the wrong way of doing things. He's a word that I think I made up, an omnipreneur. He's ready to take on whatever the world puts in his path. Thanks to his lack of inhibition and his furry little friend, the Fool's set up for success. There might be bumps in the road, but those bumps are for another incarnation to worry about. They aren't for this Fool to worry about. He's ready to go. And what about if we get the Fool reversed, upside down? When he presents upside down, he's a bit more of a cautionary tale. Instead of being an asset, the reversed fool's innocence and ignorance becomes a liability, as a failure to plan or have a care for the consequences of his actions puts him on a path to self-destruction. He's selfish and he's self-absorbed. The reversed fool is a signal to take your head out of the sand and start paying attention. It's not cute anymore. The time for idly pushing forward is over. Now you need to evaluate your options, weigh risks versus rewards, and start paying attention to how your actions are affecting the people around you. If it seems like I'm being a little bit harsh, let's take it in a different direction, and maybe you're the one being taken advantage of. With open eyes, you can see that this is happening, so it's still on you to pay attention. But if it's happening to you, you can turn the situation back into something more positive with planning and calculation. You're going to want to work to turn the reverse fool back over by paying attention to detail, being fastidious in your actions and your habits, and listening to those around you who are willing to tell you the things you may not want to be hearing right now. Be on the lookout for unclear situations that you can clarify simply by adding information to others' information or by gathering more information of your own. All in all, the Fool is a delightful card, and I love him. That's why we chose him as the ambassador of our podcast. And that is all I'm going to say about the Fool this week. I hope that was informational and educational and in some way enjoyable. And if it wasn't, then I guess you'll just have to wait till the next section of the show, which is coming up right now. Right now, I want to introduce my friend Julia Bramer. Julia has been reading tarot for 2 decades?
38 years almost.
Okay.
So a little more than that.
So slightly more than 2 decades. That's amazing. Let's just jump right into it. You are, in addition to being a seasoned tarot reader, you are a scholar and a professor. Correct. And where do you profess at?
I'm an adjunct professor at Lindenwood University's creative writing program. I teach graduate level creative writing.
I met you through Aaron at Rise Coffee House.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron was like, you gotta talk to this woman.
We went to grad school together.
Yeah. And he was very excited, and he told me about your work with tarot and then your work with Sylvia Plath, which dovetails nicely with the work that you do with the tarot and Sylvia Plath.
Right, yeah.
So let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay, yeah. My Plath work, I came to find it in graduate school. I started in 2007. Over at University of Missouri, St. Louis. And I was bringing my tarot cards into classes a lot. I had a professor, Stephen Schreiner, who kept encouraging me. You know, he would see me read for my fellow students, and I would bring them into our you know, end of the semester parties and all the things students do. And he would see me give all these readings, and invariably you get a bunch of poets together and a few bottles of wine, and I had reduced the whole room into tears. but Steve was like, you know, you're really good at this. You ought to do this professionally. And, you know, it's interesting. I never set out to be a professional tarot card reader, but my professional career started around that time also. So that was just, it kind of was a springboard from school, because I had people asking me to be at their events and offering to pay me, and one thing led to another. So I never set out to be a professional tarot card reader. I'd been reading since I was 16, way back when. It's just been a daily part of my life for most of my life, certainly all of my adult life. Getting back to the Plath work, when I was in Dr. Schreiner's poetry form and theory class, I was reading a lot of Sylvia Plath, and I was like, gosh, you know, there's all this tarot imagery in her work. What is this about? And I took it to Steve Schreiner, and he's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I realized that you had to be kind of a tarot scholar and a Plath scholar to see it in her work. And that essentially the world has missed this for the last 50-some years since she's been dead. She has, you know, she's been interpreted as the confessional poet, and she's known for her famous suicide and all the drama that goes with her. We love drama in our society, of course. But everyone was missing her genius. And what I realized as I was putting the tarot imagery together, the first thing I realized is her masterpiece collection of poetry. It's called Ariel. It is constructed entirely in order, starting with the major arcana, the Fool card, you know, through the whole major arcana into the whole minor arcana. And I was like just stunned that if you match the poem with its corresponding card, you realize that the poem has an entirely different meaning from how the world's been interpreting it. The world has been looking at her autobiography and applying every poem specifically to that. But there are a lot of influences. So in my book, Fixed Stars Govern a Life, Decoding Sylvia Plath, I take each poem And I show that she has taken one set of words, which is the poem, and it has at least six different facets. I say facet in the book, I call it mirrors, to use a more alchemical and Plathian image. The first mirror is the Tarot Kabbalah, just how the poem reflects the card itself and the card's meaning. So in every poem, she's, you know, using the colors, she's using the imagery, she's using the symbolism, she's using the actual meaning of the card, and weaves it right into the poem in this beautiful, undeniable way. As soon as you know how to look for it, it's like, oh my God, it's right there. The second one is alchemy, which was a new trip for me. And what I learned about Kabbalah, to take it back a bit, and Hughes did, her husband, Ted Hughes, did write about Kabbalah quite a bit. And, you know, again, it only makes sense that Plath was his most devoted student, shall we say. Of course, she would have learned what he was studying and fascinated by. Kabbalah begins, you know, the roots of Kabbalah go back to ancient Jewish mysticism. Plath has all these references of being a Jew, and people have, you know, condemned her and said, what is this, you know, Protestant, you know, white American privileged, you know, who is she? And she's been condemned for using these Jewish phrases and claiming any sort of kinship with the Jews. Well, she was talking about Kabbalah. She wasn't she used a lot of war imagery because she was a child, you know, just right out of World War II. So, mm-hmm. you know, and her father was German, and there was a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of family background that made that apply. Yeah. Exactly. And that's where the autobiography does come in. But most of that Jewish stuff is about Kabbalah, as I've uncovered it. So what I learned with Kabbalah is, you know, all I knew before I started the Plath work was that Madonna wore a red, you know, bracelet or something, right. you know, a band of yarn around her wrist or something. I believe Britney Spears is into it too, you know, and that's sort of like the Hollywood Kabbalah. What Kabbalah is sort of this umbrella over all of the occult sciences. So it's a system. I like to think of it as the God system, sort of like this higher order of how things go. And so tarot is a mirror of it. Astrology is a mirror of it. Numerology gets in there. All of the occult sciences, they tend to be structured in the same way. And that way is Kabbalah. So Kabbalah is the roadmap or the template for kind of how the world works, for a better,
okay.
yeah, for lack of other words.
How the hidden world works?
You know, I don't even want to say hidden, because what I learned, you know, in looking at the other mirrors in her poem, so there was this alchemical mirror. I knew nothing about alchemy. I'm still quite stupid as far as, you know, giving you the hard, you know, definitions of the blackening phase and rubido and putrefaction and all of this, you know, sort of chemist talk.
I know one of those terms.
Yeah, it's what I've learned about alchemy is it's sort of a three, there's sort of a trinity within alchemy. There's practical alchemy, which is what the alchemist does in the chemist's laboratory, which is the old lead to gold. There is the, you know, Jungian alchemy, to apply Carl Jung's name to it, you know, or maybe you want to call it the emotional alchemy or the personal development alchemy, which is to find the higher self and to self-actualize, to become your best self, led to gold again. And then there is the spiritual aspect of alchemy, which is to find God, led to gold again. And so the idea of the true alchemist is they're practicing on all three levels. So whether Plath was an actual practical alchemist as far as using a laboratory, I have no idea, and I haven't found any evidence for that. But I certainly know that she got some of the terms, and certainly Ted Hughes was very into really structuring a lot of his work around alchemy, and that's been widely studied and written about, by the way. So Platt's work was an introduction to alchemy. It was also an introduction to me really expanding the very little bit I knew about mythology. Mythology is so rich with knowledge, and you know, the ancient Greeks, of course, came up with this, but Freud stole from it like crazy, because it's how the human mind works. It's how the human life goes. It's those things that trip us up, like hubris, you know, and
upside down fool card.
Right. And so we have a lot of mythology that's also woven into Platt's work, and Kabbalah, you know, has its little tentacles in mythology too. It runs on the same, you know, it's a very complicated chart that certainly could not be described over a podcast, but the relationship.
But we're going to do it right now.
Maybe you are, Brian.
Well, there's a lot of circles and lines, and there's
right.
words on those lines.
The tree of life, right. That tree of life is the template. That is the structure. The major arcana and the minor arcana fits on that Kabbalah tree of life. You could have alchemical properties and phases on that tree of life. Getting into back to the Platt stuff and what she taught me about Kabbalah, history, you know, history in the world, and this is where you were talking about, I can't remember if you said faith or you said the hidden world. And I said, not exactly, because, history tends to recreate this system also. And Plath showed that in different ways. And art does as well. So in her poem for the Fool card, our card of the week, her poem is Morning Song, and it is, most people read it and say, okay, it's a poem about her child, but it's a lot more complicated than that. It is our tarot card, the Fool, and innocence. It is
it's morning, like the beginning of the day. Morning.
Yes, okay. Yes. It is the alchemical stage of distillation, which is sort of the first, the beginning. It is in mythology. It is our wild partying god Dionysus. It is in the history in the world. It's interesting. She says, "Love set you going like a fat gold watch." She skips down. You took your place among the elements, and on the day that she wrote this, a new element had just been discovered on something called a cyclotron, which is like a fat gold watch, you know. And so anyway, there are these historical kind of world events that mirror this. It's also a great mirror of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World.
Now we're back somewhere I know about.
Yeah, okay, all right. And so, and Huxley, of course, took that title from Shakespeare's The Tempest, which was the first Shakespeare play that Plath ever saw. Miranda says, oh, what a brave new world, you know, and that's where Huxley took it. And there are lines that Plath uses, you know, I'm no more your mother, she says. And if you remember the Brave New World story, we have Linda, the mother of John Savage, and she's like, I'm not your mother. And so there's all these little references back and forth. But what you will see reading my book as I pull it all together is that this all is telling the same story over and over and over again. So whether we're looking at Dionysus and the myth, or whether we're looking at Brave New World, or what, you know, it's sort of like the same elements across the board, and this idea of beginnings, and this idea of the Fool, and you know, the Fool is considered to be kind of wild and savage, and you know, the base material, the lead in alchemy. In Huxley's book, the name is John Savage, you know? I mean, it's just beautiful crossovers back and forth. And she did it poem after poem after poem. You know, 40 times she did it. And if you're wondering now, if you're doing the math in your head,
I am.
And you're saying, wait a minute, there's 78 cards in the tarot. And Julia said major and minor arcana. What I learned, and that was what I thought at first. I thought, oh, well, so maybe she just did the majors and then the rest of her poems were just something else. Mm-hmm. No, Plath was a perfectionist. And I knew that, and that was nagging at me too. And that was when I realized the following 10 poems were the ranks. They were the ones, the twos, the threes. And then we got into the court cards. And then she had four extra cards. And I was like, what could they be? And oh, duh, the suits. So there's a poem for the pentacles and a poem for the cups and a poem for the wands and a poem for the swords. Yeah. And I mean, this is a masterpiece. As you know, I wish that I could just do, yeah, maybe I should have my own podcast, just kind of going over Plath's poems.
Well, you can come here every week and we'll go over one card and we can do one Plath poem.
For the Plath-obsessed fans, yeah.
Yeah, amateur and professional Plath scholars.
So, yeah, so that was my introduction to Kabbalah. I am by no means an expert in Kabbalah. I wonder if anyone is. I mean, I would think it's a lifetime of study, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm just scratching the surface. But I think Plath made me a better tarot card reader, even though I had been reading for, you know, 3 decades at that time that I went back to graduate school. It just took me so much more deeply into it. I had never explored the astrological stuff or the, you know, there's something called gematria. Have you heard of gematria? It's woven into the tarot cards also. It's like a Hebrew numerology word game kind of thing. You know, okay. there are occasionally, depending on your deck, you'll see some Hebrew in some tarot
decks.
Yeah,
just little letters.
Yeah, and that's all, you know, there's so much Kabbalistic stuff that's like woven into it. And so, yeah, so I have been down the rabbit hole. I have yet to surface.
So if somebody wanted to find out more about this, this is wildly interesting and much larger than my modest podcast can hold. Where would they find out more about this?
Well, they could look up my book. I do have a website for the book itself, fixedstarsgovernalife.com. You can also look up the book on Amazon.
Would you say that your book is a primer on any of these, on Plath, on Ariel, or on any of those six mirrors?
All of that. So it's a long book, you know, and I realize it's not light reading. And that may frighten some people away, too. It really does read more like a textbook. I have talked to, I've done tarot workshops and been on other radio shows and explained that anybody could probably learn tarot from my book just by reading.
Good, because I need to.
I'll have to give you a copy of my book, right? The first mirror, you know, how Plath reflects the tarot card. I talk about what the card means and all of that. And the related mythology with it. And how the mythological story contributes to the meaning of the card, and you know, and who's pictured, and you know, like Dionysus on the Fool card, for instance. He's about partying. He's about playing. He doesn't really care about the future. He doesn't really care if he's stepping off that cliff. And maybe when he steps off that cliff, maybe there's just, you know, some ground right there to catch him that we can't see, or maybe he's doing a drop to his death. Doesn't matter to him, you know. It's all about the good time in the moment and keeping his eyes up to the skies. And so so that's in there in my book. As far as, let's see, you were talking about, does my book teach Kabbalah, I think you said?
Yeah, I'm wondering if I were to, is it accessible to me as someone who knows no Plath, no Ariel, and
yeah,
relatively nothing about the six mirrors that you're
talking
about.
Yeah, because I was not an expert in history. I was not an expert in art. I was not an expert in, certainly not alchemy. I knew a little bit about mythology. You know, so I've just been peeling it all away. Oh, and astrology and astronomy, that's in there. I've been peeling it all away, and I try to give just a clear overview. And anyone who wanted to learn more could certainly read more. But I'm just showing kind of like the overall story, how all the mirrors connect, which is the magic miracle of Kabbalah, and how Plath made this miracle tangible in her poetry.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was great. That's more smartness than you've heard from anything that we've done. So now I guess I'd like to ask you to let me do a reading.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
I would love to be read by you.
Excellent. As listeners to the regular podcast know, I'm not good at this. And I don't know what I'm doing. And so typically we have a spread that we do, a three-card spread that we do on our regular shows that indicates the recent past, the present action, and the future outcome. And this time I'm going to do a three-card spread for the day that is going to indicate what is within, what is without, and then advice for the day. And so this is, conceptually, I'm just going to lay open the secrets of the world for this 24-hour cycle.
All right.
I don't have Ben with me. Usually, if you listen, Ben does Foley work, and that's when you know when we flip a card over. But I'm going to have to just try and flip cards over really loud. Now, because I don't have Ben with me to say flip, but what you hear is actual card shuffling, not Foley work shuffling like Ben does. I owe a lot to Ben, and I wish he cared enough to be here, but he doesn't, so it's just us. Thank you for showing up, Julian.
Thank you.
All right, so let's get started. I'm going to flip over the first card, which indicates what's within you today.
Okay.
I'm going to shuffle these cards again because I was just the fool. Just like I think it stayed on top of the deck from all the shuffling.
Well, if it shows up again, it was meant to be.
If it shows up again, then yes. Do you have a way that you like to shuffle?
No, I'm actually a really poor shuffler. For 38 years of tarot, I can't shuffle worth beans. So I sort of do the stacking kind of shuffles. And I have clients who are really intimidated about shuffling. And they're like, you know, I can't do it. And I said, just smear it on the table or cut it a bunch of times. Yeah. So there are no rules for this.
Yeah. Ben has tiny, tiny hands. And so he can't shuffle at all.
Yeah, I kind of do too, actually.
I'm probably going to take out a lot of this Ben bashing, but I want to have it in there just in case. I just don't want to go overboard with it. Okay, so we're going to flip over the first card, which is within. It's what's within you today.
Okay.
Temperance. Hmm. So temperance is a card about temperance. It's about... I can't think of the word that I'm looking for. Moderation. Mm-hmm. It's you are. I associate it also with justice. Like I feel like it's evenly weighted.
It has that equilibrium about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what's within you today is temperance. You are very moderate in what you're doing today. I don't have more things to say, and I wish I did.
I would just add, as far as the meaning, it can be a card of health or having health matters on your mind.
Okay.
It's our alchemist. So, you know, the angel and the temperance card has the two cups, you know, mm-hmm. and he or she is sort of not very clearly gendered, purposefully, I think. Is taking one cup and pouring it into the other, kind of a back and forth thing. The angel has one foot on land and one foot in the water. I do think of myself relating very much to temperance. In fact, it is a card of Sagittarius, which is my sign.
Okay.
And
I'm really good at this tarot thing.
And, as far as one foot on land and one foot on water, you know, I'm very much an artist and a free thinker and, you know, into the occult side of things, but I'm also an academic and I'm also a scholar and not quite on one side of the fence or the other. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's similar to the star card with the one foot on land and one foot in the water. Right.
I guess she is. Yeah. Yeah. She's kneeling on the land, I believe. Yeah.
And she's an Aquarius card, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's me.
Okay.
Cool. And speaking of art as well, I like to talk about the decks that I'm using. Mm-hmm. And so I think I've used this deck on the show before. It's the Line Strider deck. It's whimsical. It's got really incredible, I think it's India ink art with watercolor.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
In the background, and I love every card in this deck, and everything that you described that is on the, I'm assuming, the Rider-Waite.
Yeah, that's
traditional
usually
symbology. It is also on here, except it, instead of cups, this angel just has its hands cupped, but still kind of in a way like they're holding a slinky. So. All right, so this next card is External Influences. It's what's without today.
Okay.
So I'm going to flip this over. Flip. And we have the Nine of Pentacles. And the Nine of Pentacles here on this deck has a woman who is holding a coin. I always call them coins, the Nine of Coins. So she's holding a coin, and she seems very demure. There's some grapes, which indicates that there's more wealth, just like the coins. And then there's an owl, which possibly indicates wisdom, but could just be a pet on another card. I'm not sure.
This is where its picture is a little different, your Line Strider versus the Rider-Waite. Nine of Pentacles is the lady in her garden. So,
like all the pentacles are up on the wall. Yeah. Uh-huh. So she's worked really hard for this stuff.
Yeah. And
now it's happening.
It's living well.
Yeah.
You know, and it's being blessed, especially around the material world. And I do feel that. I feel very blessed right now. So, yeah, I'm good with that.
Well, I will take full credit for that because I'm what's without right now. Great. So that's good. And I remember what that card is, which I was very afraid that I wasn't going to remember that. Okay, and now we're going to flip out. This is just advice for the rest of the day. And this is early in the afternoon, so you have a lot of time to mull it over and to use this advice. Flip. We have the Ace of Swords. The Ace of Swords is a nice card on the Rider-Waite deck. It's one of the Monty Python cards because it's an ace. So it's just a giant hand sticking out with a sword. On this one, we have...
I get it. The Monty Python. Took me a second, but right, those sort of floating hands in the air. And yeah.
So we have a falcon or a hawk sitting on the hilt of a sword, like a perch. The falcon has a crown on its head. The Ace of Swords is a recommendation to just plow forward. You have everything that you need right now to move ahead, with the caveat that it's a double-edged sword. So move forward, do what you need to do, but do it in the kindest possible way is my interpretation of it usually. Do it in the most prudent way so that you don't end up cutting yourself or someone else with this sword that you've been given.
Yeah. I think of it as striking out, you know, so which fits what you've said, certainly. I think of it as a very entrepreneurial card.
Mm-hmm.
And given what I just told you about, like, self-publishing, and I feel like, you know, that's a reading saying go for it.
That other podcast we're starting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Amateur Plath Scholar podcast.
And look at all the money and the good lifestyle we're going to have from it with the Nine of Pentacles, yeah. So, and Temperance, you know, maybe you and I are just the next future podcast show, you know, our balance here.
Well, so, Ben's not here, so...
So I think that's a great three card reading, and I'm honored that you did it for me, or even half did it for me.
Yeah, thank you for doing the heavy lifting. Wonderful. Well, I would like to thank you, Julia, for coming and for spending your afternoon with me and for teaching me about Plath and Kabbalah and alchemy and the Nine of Pentacles, which I should have known, but I didn't. Thank you so much for just coming and sitting with me and telling me all this stuff. And also, I guess this is the time when I want to thank Hug Monster Sound, the collective of sound experts, audio experts here in St. Louis, who have been kind enough to create and provide our theme music and our bumpers. And that's all the people I'm thanking. You know who I'm not thanking? Ben. He's not here. But I would like to take this time to, what my notes say is, pimp that guest. And so I just want to say, if you wanted to go to Amazon or to fixstarsgovernalife.com and check out Julia's book, Fix Stars, Govern a Life, Decoding Sylvia Plath, it sounds very, very interesting, and it sounds like I could probably learn a lot from it. If you wanted to contact us, if you wanted to tell me how awesome this was, if you wanted to tell me, hey, where's Ben? Bring him back, whatever. I'm not going to listen, but you can contact us through our new website, amateurtarot.com. You can email us any questions at amateurtarotreading@gmail.com. You can always contact us on Twitter and see cards of the day at Tarot Amateur. And Instagram as well, you can see cards of the day, and that's at Amateur Tarot. So if you know the word amateur and you know the word tarot, you can probably figure out how to get in touch with us. But the best way right now is to go to our new website, amateurtarot.com, and use the contact form there. And also, the last thing I want to say thank you again to Julia, because I've only thanked you like four times, and I think five is the right number.
I don't know. I'm thinking a few more.
Well, thank you. So, but I wanted to implore you, if you like this or if you didn't like this, please go to iTunes and rate and review us. Just give us 5 stars. It doesn't hurt you. But it is free to rate us and review us. It doesn't cost you anything, and it does help us out a lot to get in front of a larger audience so that we can do more really awesome stuff. And so, yeah, thank you, the listener, for listening. And if there's nothing else from any of you people, and if Ben's not going to bust through the door. Nope, he didn't bust through the door. I gave you the out, Ben. I gave you a way to get on this show, and you decided not to. So, whatever. I guess I'll just have to wait until Sunday when we record the regular show. We will talk to you soon. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Adios. I'm not asking anyone to believe anything.